Ladies and gentlemen, baby. And everyone in between, welcome to the Midgar Minute Podcast. I am Chris, joined as always by my lovely and faithful co-host, Nick. Nick, how are you doing on this fine evening?
Well, you could say I'm feeling reborn because, man.
Yes.
Let me tell you. It came through. I had some pretty high expectations, and it came through.
I also had very high expectations and was still blown away multiple times. I had my expectations shattered multiple times playing through this game.
Yeah, right?
But let's, before we get too ahead of ourselves, we first would like to thank our lovely, lovely folks over at the Mosey Gang, our supporters of the podcast here, who give as little as $1 a month or $1 once and get access to our Discord, where we do, I'm going to do some Rebirth streams in there soon. I've done Remake streams. We watch stuff, game conferences, things like that, and all that other kind of stuff. We have other things planned for it too. So if you're interested in that, there's links in the description of this episode and in our social medias as well. But, by name, I would like to thank, our lovely folks over there, Scott, Kyle, AJ, Danny, Kevin, Jillian, Brianne, Matt, Sam, Charlotte, Cameron, Garrett, Dan M, Ryan, Petros, Matt M, Tyos 48, Colton, Tone, Kimmy, Chris G, John, Flynn, Jim, Joey, Trey, Carmen, Gracie, Benjamin, Lucas, Justin, and new supporter, Alex. Thank you so, so much, Alex, and everyone else. And of course, special shouts out to Carmen, who does our intro and outro music there. Capstone Audio on YouTube, I believe. I say I believe every time, even though I'm pretty sure that's it. Thank you guys so, so much. And second part of this, I guess announcing that we're going to be making some slight changes to the production side of things here on the Midgar Minute. And essentially what we're going to be doing is live streaming our recordings. And we'll be streaming that to, we're not sure if we're going to be doing Twitch or YouTube or both, but we're also going to be doing it to the Discord as well, so a little, you know, sneaky transition there into talking about that stuff, because then, you can come in, you can join in, we do like our little pre-discussions and stuff, but we're just kind of talking about random stuff. You know, we'll have a lot of more guests on. If you got something you want to say, you know, you may even be a guest on this very show. This will be the last sort of the way that we have been doing it. And it's more mainly just for ease of production on our side. But the general show is not really going to change all that much. It's still going to be us getting things wrong and rambling on about random shits and spiraling off into crackpot theories about which breed dog of stamp in the stamp verse are we in, which I guess to tie that up in a bow real quick, nothing much is really changing, but if you'd like to be a bit more involved with the show, we are going to start doing, when we do it live, you can obviously talk in chat and stuff like that as well. You don't have to support the show in order to get into Discord and all that stuff, but it's there if you want to. But yeah, it's still the same old Midgar Minute, just, you know, modernized, reborn, if you will. Like you said, there's multiple rebirths happening here. Pretty obvious that this episode we're going to be talking about Rebirth, because we have both have finished it at least once at this point, and at various points of a second playthrough at this this date and time. So, obviously, huge, mega, massive, colossal, meteoric spoiler warning here. If you have not finished the game, do not listen to this episode. Please
get out.
Get out of here. We want you to be come back after you're done. But if you haven't played it, or I guess, or if you haven't finished it, or if you don't own a PS5 and you don't care about getting spoiled, which, man, really, if you don't own a PS5, I feel that the struggle for that's got to be pretty real. So, yeah, we're going to be kind of just generally talking about everything, and there's no... We can't really... There's too much in this game to really... Like, oh, what... Can we cherry-pick certain things? I mean, we can give, like, our general spoiler-free opinions. It's a great fucking game. Okay, spoiler time. But, yeah, no, last warning, seriously. If you haven't... Do the comeback after. Finish it. I know it's a big-ass, girthy game, so... No worries. We'll be here waiting for you when you come back. So, final warning. If you hear, I don't want to hear about it. So, yeah. Where to even begin with this game? It's amazing.
Can I actually just...
Yeah, oh, please,
I think I
want
to get something out of the way.
Because
we did this last time when Remake came out. So, we're definitely going to talk a little bit about the ending today, everybody. You know, I know that's where a lot of the juiciest discourse and conversation is happening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we're going to do a whole episode on the ending, like we did with Remake, because it's worthy of a discussion in of itself. Today's episode is more generally our reactions to us both putting lots of hours into this game now, both having completed it and kind of spending our time with it. I just kind of want to make today's episode's approach clear, so that no one's underwhelmed when we don't give the ending the due that it so rightfully deserves.
Right, yes. And thank you for doing that, because I absolutely would not have brought that up myself and would not have even considered that.
That's what I'm here for, man. That's what I'm here for.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, there's so much, man. There's so much where... All right, well, I guess we can... I mean, we could start right at the ending if we want to talk about, which is an amazing sequence. The entire Temple of the Ancients, like everything from that point forward is like on an entirely different level that I wasn't prepared for. Exactly. Cause I'm like, all right, well, they have to one up themselves. Right, they can't, because, like, I mean, Remake, you know, while it's still good, also kind of ended abruptly. You know, it was very just like, oh yeah, here we are, and then it's over, you know. But this kind of let it the buildup happened over a longer period of time, and I feel like the payoff was a lot more satisfying, generally speaking.
So before we get into the specifics, I would generally agree with you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we were talking a little bit about this in the pre-roll. I felt that the ending sequence I really enjoyed. Narratively, I do enjoy what happened at the ending there. I do definitely have some.
It did go on a
discuss.
Little too long, though.
Well, you know, it's not even the too long. What got me was that they introduced the big scene, left it ambiguous as to what had actually happened. And then we went on an hour and a half boss ladder, which was a fantastic boss ladder, don't get me wrong. But by the time I got to the end of the boss ladder, I forgot where they had left me off. And I was like, oh, yeah, we were here. Like, so I felt that while generally I thought this game did a lot better with its pacing, I felt the pacing of the finale, I felt like the gameplay and the cutscenes just did not mix. Now, when I've gone back and watched the cutscenes of this game, if you just watch the cutscenes of the finale, the pacing is perfect. But you enter an hour and a half of boss ladder fights in between, you know, the answer to the big question, and I just felt like it just took me out of it too much. You know,
yeah,
that's my only real complaint with the ending there.
Yeah, and I also, I mean, I do have my complaints about this game, and I not that many, but I think a reasonable amount.
I almost want to get them out of the way so I can just gush about it endlessly.
Yeah. So the pacing, just the overall pacing of the game. If you do like because the way I did it was I pretty much played through everything. I did all the side stuff, all the world intel stuff. And I think doing it that way is not the best way. Doing everything is not... It's not necessary, and it's also, I don't think, the best way to play the game. I think if you do just enough to get whatever material you want from Chadley in each region, and then you not touching any more of it, I think for your first time doing it is probably the most ideal way to play it through, pacing-wise, because I basically would, I would play like a story mission, and then do some world intel stuff, and kind of do like little... You know, take little breaks from one and the other and just do that. But as I got closer towards the end of the game, I just started beelining the story because it really started picking up. And I was like, eh, a lot of this stuff doesn't really... like, doesn't really have a lot of effect on... Like, you get some cool stuff, but I think most of it is safely avoidable, I think, would be the nicest way to put it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of those side quests do offer a lot more context.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But a lot of it is very character-driven, which is good. That's actually, that's the narrative stuff.
I love that there are all the, like, side missions are tied to certain characters, you know, or they'll just be involved with it. Certain party members will be involved with a certain quest, either because it relates to... to them, or, you know, something that they would know, or just because it'd be, like, funny, I guess. I don't know. Like, you know, escorting Sam and the dog, and Barrett's having...
Oh, I love that one.
Having a fucking meltdown about how he misses Marlene. Okay, another complaint I have. The mixing, the sound mixing... was kind of an issue.
Let me tell you something. I think this is an industry-wide issue. I feel like I can never play a game
without
me having to go into the settings and change the audio and dialogue volumes.
See, like, I normally don't have to, and that's why I thought it was a little bit bizarre that I'm like, oh, it's, you know, and I'm trying to remember the first time. I think that might have been the first time I really noticed it, but, you know, there were times before you could, like, all right, it's a little hard to kind of make it out, but, you know, I have subtitles on, so it's not, like, a huge deal. But yeah, that was when I really started feeling it. And then I think it was at Rufus's welcoming ceremony also, where it's just like you have the music blaring in the background. You're like, what? Huh? What are we talking about? There's a bald bar?
Oh, dude. When I walked in on the bald cult, I fucking... lost my mind. Just got us demonetized, but I fucking lost my mind. I still can't. Clearly, I've not rationalized this in my head yet because I don't have the words, but I couldn't. There's a few things in this game where they pull that move, and I'm like, did you just really, like, let's just say the anti-PETA side quest in Gungaga? Where I was like, oh my, did you just... there... The game has such a great sense of humor.
It does. Honestly, it reminds me a lot of certain Yakuza or Like a Dragon games, where it balances the serious and the not so serious, and like it kind of excels at both of them. Not always, but I feel like more often than not, you know, there's even just the characters talking to each other. Like, I think one of my favorite interactions in the entire game happens, like, super early on when you're talking about, you're doing the flashback, and, you know, Aerith said something of, like, oh, I heard on the news that Sephiroth died or whatever after Nibelheim. And then Barrett's like, you know, people are fucking idiots who listen to that shit. And she's like, question, does that make me an idiot or whatever? Does that make me a dumbass?
And all those dumbasses are buying it. And she's like, question, I believe them. Does that make me a dumbass?
And he's like, I mean, shame on Shinra for making...
For taking advantage of such honest folk.
Yeah. Like, stuff like that. And honestly, I love that... That was one of the aspects of this game that I was not particularly worried about, was the dialogue between characters and all the other stuff, because all of it was great. every, I don't think there's any, at any point that there was any, even Cate Sith, man, a character that
they made me love him. I loved him. I wanted him on screen all the time.
I had no, like, I went into this being like, all right, like, my general opinion of Cate Sith is that I don't have an opinion about him. You know, I always just kind of accepted that he is just here. He's there. He's there. And like, yeah, thank you for, you know, sacrificing yourself for us. But, yeah, just never really vibed with Cate Sith, I guess, in OG. But yeah, this game made me at least be like, ah, Cate Sith, I kind of like you now. Yeah, like I can more than just tolerate you now.
Yeah, not only that, like, I genuinely enjoyed him.
Yeah, like there were many times where I'm like, ah, like he feels like.
Enjoy. There were also some things, by the way, that and this will be a little bit long winded, that I felt were so much more narratively immersive, in the sense that, okay, and again, let me make something very clear, by the way, before I go on this rant. I absolutely love OG Final Fantasy VII. I think it's one of the greatest games Square Enix has ever put out. Moving on from that, one of the things that always bugged me narratively about OG FF7 is these are supposed to be eco-terrorists traveling the world, and nobody seems to stop them or be like, hey, what are you doing here? Like, you know, and that's one thing Rebirth, I thought, handled very well, was there were several places you went where you were either welcome, unwelcome, or semi-blackmailed because of that position.
Right.
It's going in. I bring that up because with Cate Sith, I liked that the party was just not nearly as gullible as they were in OG.
Yeah, like immediately they're like, so
they knew he was sus from the beginning. I'm like, good, it's obvious. It should be anyway.
Yeah, and it's still like, even if you don't know the twist that he betrays you, that, you know, like it's still effective, I think. You know, it's still just as effective here, and it's more believable, you know, and it's something that, like, when he, you know, is invited back into the party, you're like, oh, okay, all right, I can at least understand it more here, you know, instead of being like, before I always felt like, I don't, like, it felt like he's just like, hey, yeah, I'm really sorry, oh, okay, I guess you can come back. You know, that's in OG, it just felt like, all right, I guess so. Like, sure, man. Why not? But yeah, here it's, it made me feel a lot more connected to him as a character. It's so bizarre, man. I don't even know. Because I'm like, they basically did remake. This is like remake on steroids. This is Mako infused remake. Yep. In every sense of the word. It's just, there's everything great that they did in remake, they just did it here, and they just did more of it, you know, and everything. I don't think there's a single thing in this game that I didn't want, you know, I mean, maybe I guess also the world intel, like, side content stuff, a lot of it was, I mean, in every region it's the same, so at certain points, like, it kind of got a little, like, you know, and again, that kind of ties back into the pacing issue, and just, I don't know, it did feel a little bit grindy, but I feel like knowing that you're not tied to any of that stuff, and there's no progression block stuff, except for some of the stuff, the proto-relic stuff in Corel region, for whatever reason, with Kid G, who, surprisingly enough, you know, I guess there are certain, like, with Cate Sith, I'm like, I can buy Cate Sith in this world, because I'm like, okay, he's like, he's a robot, basically, right? He's just a furry robot cat. I can buy that. But then I see Kid G, and I'm like, and everyone's just like, oh, yeah, he's a talking goblin. I'm like, oh, yeah, right. those exist in this world. You're like, everything's just so, like, hyper-realistic. And then there's Kid G with his boxing gloves and his beanie, or toque if you're Canadian, I guess. That's the word, I think, right? Yeah, it's so weird. And this game is able to pull off all these different tones and scenarios and everything. And in a way that I feel like there wasn't any point where I was not enjoying myself. Except for maybe, like I said, with the World Intel stuff towards the end. Because it's, you know, all the Moogle shops are the same, you know. I mean, they could just get a little bit more difficult each time. Like, it's still, you know, but it's enough. And I feel like there is probably an optimal way to do like a certain amount of side content and then story and then, you know, but I think my balance at a certain point, like, I did too much of the World Intel stuff and then I beelined the rest of the story basically. Cause I'm like, all right, I want to know what happens. I want to know, you know, cause at a certain point, like, the story, and much like Remake, kind of like starts out, you know, you're like, okay, like, there's, you know, I like everything that's going on here and it's interesting and engaging, and then it just starts, like, it starts ramping up. Because I mean, I also, the beginning of this game, starting out from Zach's perspective in the beginning, was amazing and is something that I did not think that we were gonna get. I thought we were just gonna launch straight into the flashback, so I like that they planted that seed immediately. They're like, oh yeah, hey, you wanted and because I was worried it was gonna be a little bit before we got to the Zach stuff, you know. I thought we were gonna do like Calm and, you know, a bunch of maybe other stuff in the grasslands, and like, we weren't gonna really, it's what are your opinions on the level of Zach in this game? Did you think there was gonna be more?
No, I actually think it was perfectly balanced, and mm-hmm. I think he was actually...
I think so, too.
You know, I've seen a lot of people wishing that there was more of him, which is...
Well, there's me wrong. There's a third game that's coming out that he's going to be involved in, I'm sure.
He will be more than involved in the third game. I think he'll even...
He has a move set in this game, mm-hmm. you know? So he's... They wouldn't just give him a move set just to not...
He's going to be an even bigger part of Part 3 than Part 2.
Uh-huh.
However, he, in my opinion, was used very well in Part 2, because if you pay attention to Zach and Zach's world, they're giving it all away. How this all works, what it is, where it's going. Zach's world, it's funny because a lot of things that happen to him are inconsequential to the main party, but I think that's what allowed them to use him in such a useful manner.
Right, and I think because my theory at this point is that he is in the prime line now at the end of everything. Like, when we see him in the church, I think
glad you said that. I want to talk about that. So
yeah,
you
also
think,
yeah, there's also,
you think he
multiple
landed
timelines
in the real world?
I do.
Oh,
I do.
I love this.
Because the flowers are alive in the church.
Yes. Yes, so they are.
It's definitely not. I mean, but we also, at this point, the way that they kind of set everything up is that there, how many of these are there, you know?
So, like, you want my opinion on that? You want me to cook?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Please do.
So, Sephiroth talked about the whole game, the confluence of worlds, the merging of worlds, right?
Yes, he wants all the side content.
Well, it's funny, right? Because now what he's effectively done, we've talked about this a great deal, right? It's mm-hmm. Genova and Sephiroth versus the planet and the life stream with Aerith mm-hmm. as their stand. And we've been over that, right?
Yeah.
But what's effectively happened here is, in the same way Shinra has scattered Genova around the planet, Genova and Sephiroth have now scattered the planet in a similar way. So now the planet kind
of
got scattered into all these different pieces.
Of the live stream or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something along those lines. However, Sephiroth's plan clearly was to converge all these worlds. Again, and we can mm-hmm. get into the nature of these worlds. I'm personally in the camp where I do not think Rebirth is a multiverse. I do not think it's alternate timelines. I think there are better explanations for what these are.
Yes, I don't think, giving it like that sort of blanket statement of like, oh, it's a multiverse, oh, it's a, technically is, but I feel like it's something,
that's the crazy thing, is if we take Sephiroth at his word for what the nature of reality is, when you did that whole cutscene where you're flying through the live stream and he's explaining to you what everything is, he makes it very clear that all these little pocket dimensions are a product of the planet. If this was a multiverse, multiple timelines, well, then there would be multiple planets, see, multiple life streams.
Here's
but
the thing
is, everything is stemming from one life stream. And the life stream is not this universal force that exists omnipresent through the galaxy. So no, the life stream is very specific to the planet of Gaia. Now, the entire time, we are only ever dealing with one life stream. And I'll pull it up in a minute. But Sephiroth's direct dialogue is that all these worlds stem from the planet and thus return to the planet when they abruptly end, as they all do. So, again, you have to see it as if there was multiple universes or multiple timelines, then you would have multiple life streams. Because the life stream, again, it's not this all-encompassing thing.
Yeah,
it's part of the planet.
These are effectively chunks of the life stream that
are being extrapolated out.
So, yeah, because the planet, and something I also wanted to bring
Cloud's
up.
Brain. It's all one thing. Genova being scattered. Cloud's memories being scattered. The planet being scattered. It's all like one thing.
It's all connected.
Like,
yeah.
It's all connected.
You can tell something that I noticed is that because Aerith is also sort of omnipotent like Sephiroth is, it feels a bit more like Sephiroth is doing some crazy shit in order to enact his plan, but I feel like Aerith is also trying, is dialing up the amount of crazy shit that she will do in order to combat that, and, you know, the planet, the will of the planet and all this stuff, I feel like is, everything is expanding in a way that I feel like makes sense and is like, okay, like with the weapons and everything, the white and black fucking whispers, which, I mean, come on. I don't know how much more transparent it could get at that point. But yeah, this definitely feels like more, you know, all these bits and pieces. And it kind of, we sort of, I feel like when we were talking about, you know, Zach's, you know, timeline, whatever, as being a sort of limbo, like that tracks more to me than that as like an, as an effective explanation of what that was, instead of, you know, this is a whole ass other timeline that is being, it's basically just like, oh, this basically like Midgar, I guess, in like this little pocket. And I think that's the same pocket we see when, we see at the end of Remake when Zack is like looking back up at Midgar after we see that he's alive, you know, and he gets blown back and then he's looking, he's like, it's, you know, fizzing, whatever, the crackling of energy around Midgar. I mean, again, we don't, at least I don't know like the full mechanics of everything that's going on here, but I feel like they've done a pretty good job of giving us way more stuff to chew on while still leaving, you know, a little like more questions to be answered, you know, and presenting new ones as well.
Yes. And the only thing I'd cap this off with is this whole confluence of worlds. It was never about combining the life stream with another universe or another place.
No.
This confluence of worlds was and always was about Cloud. That's why Cloud at the end of the game is essentially living in two different worlds, because the confluence of worlds happened within him.
Within him, yeah. So basically, yeah, the entire finale, well, not all of it, but most of it happens in Cloud's mind, essentially, yeah. It's a duel of the fates, if you will.
There you go.
Over this young boy's mind. Which, I think the all the stuff that they were doing with Cloud in this game was amazing. I think a lot like executed, and I knew ever since the demo when we saw his puppy form. and also I love that we remember when we were worried that the stamp bag was going to be like a red herring, but then it ended up being the only way you could signify which little pocket dimension that we were in. I got a real kick out of that. We're like, oh, we're in the Corgiverse, and we're gonna have to start referring to these points in time as such, you know. Oh yeah, we're in the Pomeranian verse. But yeah, I think the stuff with Cloud, I mean, just amazing. Everyone, I don't think any character had any bad stuff in this entire game.
Well, I know. But I've got a bone.
I know
to pick.
You have your thorn in your side here.
My man Sid, who I did enjoy, and he did crack me up. So let me be clear about that. I thoroughly enjoyed him.
Yes.
But oh man, is this just a different Sid than the one?
It's a different Sid, and honestly, it's kind of. It's a more extreme version of what happened with Barrett.
It's the Kingdom Hearts Sid. That's what we got.
Yeah.
We shortcut him to the Kingdom Hearts Sid.
Yeah. but
just a grumpy uncle.
I still feel like that suits him, though. Like they cut. It's almost like
it does. But I wanted to see him become that. You know what I mean?
Right.
I wanted
to see his original.
The way Sid is now, I wanted to see him become this.
Right. Right. You know. Yeah. By the time, of like Advent Children and Dirge and stuff. Yeah, where he is that.
Like, bro,
you
could have made him a grumpy asshole for 10 freaking minutes, and then he could have seen Aerith been like, "You're a fall on his daughter," and then like, "Okay, now I know why he's being so nice
to you." I used
to
want
to
bang your mom.
Right. Yeah.
So, I am duty bound to protect you now. And, he failed.
Yep.
Everyone failed. But did they, though? But did they, is the question. Because another thing that I liked in regards to the ending is like those canon events, for lack of a better term, where it's like, Zack always faces off against a platoon of soldiers, you know.
Yeah, the idea that no matter what, the same fate is coming for you, because it's not just Zack.
Even
Biggs too.
Sephiroth, Sephiroth always finds Aerith and kills her. You
correct.
Know, like, it's like that will always happen no matter what, and
fate
that's
has
kind
one
of
twisted sense of humor.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was expecting going into it, because I didn't think I was trying to wrestle my expectations of how crazy they were gonna go, because I even remember like going through the Temple of the Ancients and being like, oh god, what are they gonna do? Like, it's getting closer now. Like, I for most of the other game I could be like, oh okay, but then you know the Zack stuff would happen, I'd be like, oh. But then you know most of the game you're just kind of like, oh yeah, everything's fine, oh yeah, look at all these chocobo racing, yeah, woo, look at fucking Solemn Gus and wow. And then, yeah, you get to the Temple of the Ancients, and it's just like, fuck, what are they going to do? What are they going to do? But I still think maybe aside from maybe playing with us a little too much in terms of what happened with Aerith.
Too much foreplay.
Yeah, it was a little too much, I think, and it kind of ties back into what we said earlier, too, just about like the finale being not as clean as it could have been. You know, like, it's still great, and I still loved it. Zack and Cloud fighting side by side against Sephiroth at the edge of creation. Like, come on, dude. Come
Peak.
On, dude.
Like, I can't. Well, here, I'll give you a little theory on that. So, yeah. I actually am starting to think that the edge of creation is the furthest most point in time in the whole trilogy.
Yeah.
And that it almost kind of exists outside of the normal flow of time. I think.
Yeah, that's
remake,
Sephiroth's little.
Remake, it was Sephiroth versus Cloud. Rebirth, Cloud and Zack versus Sephiroth. Game number 3, Cloud, Zack, Aerith, Sephiroth.
Yeah, so basically it happened. That's like the opposite, reverse. Like, because I thought it was going to be Cloud and Aerith this time, and then Zack would come around in the third game, and then they'd all, you know, they'd reach hands across the world, or what, you know, all the timelines, or whatever it ended up being, right? And they would all come together and finally defeat Sephiroth. But I that's why I was like so surprised when it happened here. And we got like both of those separately, but they're all going to come together because now Aerith is essentially what Sephiroth is for Cloud in terms of, like, you know, the dark side, for lack of a better term. She's going to start appearing to Cloud in that same way that Sephiroth does. And probably would have an easier time doing it than Sephiroth, because Sephiroth only appears to be able to do that when there's a clone around. Whereas
I
feel like Aerith can just...
Let's give your point credit here. It seems like Aerith picked up on what Sephiroth's been doing and said, okay, two can play that game.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're going to be the devil on his shoulder, then I'm going to be the angel on the other shoulder.
I love that before you fight him, you know, in the white void. He's like, I underestimated you.
Yo, that was so hype. I was like, damn right you did, son.
I'm like, okay,
that's
so
my
yeah,
girl
like
right then, there. That's damn right I'm you like, did.
You know, and even that little, you know, section where you're, you know, you're posing for the pictures and doing all this like little cute stuff with Aerith, and Sephiroth's like, this is your game. This is what you're doing. This is you're hiding over here trying to delay what's going to happen. And well, I like the Aerith is playing like Cloud is just being used by everybody to obtain some form of materia.
This is why all I want is like some fucking like city slicking asshole in like Wutai or something to call Cloud a tool. Like, you're just a tool, bro. You're a tool.
I got skills. Fetch skills. Good old Stamp. Biting the hand that feeds him.
Or is he a loyal little doggy?
I guess to talk about stuff that's not directly related to the ending. I liked all the regions. I think are great. The music in this game, dude, holy shit. They went above and beyond for this in a level, like the fact that even like Queen's Blood, which yeah, I guess we didn't talk about Queen's Blood.
Oh,
fucking love
bro,
Queen's
I,
Blood,
I'll,
by the
I
way.
Would, let me tell you something. I, if that it was be, a real game, I'd be a professional Queen's
that's,
Blood
I'm,
player.
Dude, that's another game where I'm like, dude, all they have to do now is take Queen's Blood, fucking Fort Condor, and just like put that in like a collection, make like a Final Fantasy VII mini game collection, and like you could put that on mobile. I'd play Queen's Blood on my phone. That would be perfect. You could do PvP stuff. I think that would be great. I think that I was thoroughly floored at how deep and like surprisingly deep Queen's Blood is. And like, oh, there's like a whole, like, you could do shit with this. You can make builds and shit. Like, it's the amount of depth that they put into this game that you can just completely sidestep is insane to me. And the music's great. The music, I fucking love the Queen's Blood theme. It's great.
Right?
And, yeah, the tournament on the Shinra 8 was fantastic. Although I couldn't beat Chadley with the cards that I had at that time. So, again, you could just skip that whole entire tournament if you wanted to. And I think that's, you know, obviously, you know, like, you want to try and do it. But I like that they gave that consideration to be like, yeah, you don't have, if you don't want to play Queen's Blood, you don't have to. You could just completely ignore this if you want to, mm-hmm. You know? But they, I think they have such confidence in it that they're like, yeah, you'll want to play it because you'll by that point you'll probably have played it enough to really start getting a feel for it, you know. So, but yeah, there's yeah, and everyone felt good to play as. All the combo attacks, the synchronization attacks were great. The summons, dude, the summon fights. I still haven't beat Odin. I still
Odin's
have
tough.
Yet. Odin's, and it's rightfully so that he's the last one that you get, as far as I know. Because, yeah, he is tough. And all of them are, even on the, like, lower difficulty, because you can get the divine intel or whatever on them and fight them at a lesser power levels. And even on some, like, Kujata, I remember, like, even on his lowest might or whatever, he was tough. But they're good, and honestly, all of the... I can't think of a single, like, boss fight or encounter in this entire game that I'm like, man, I didn't like that. You know?
No, I love... Let me just say, the Turks fights were so much fun.
Oh, dude. Fucking Elena. Dude, I love Elena. They did... I was
Check
hoping...
Check out the Turks' latest and greatest. Elena.
She does... She fucking hacky sacks a grenade. like, just little shit like that, man. Like, they... All the little... you know, the little characterization bits that I was hoping, like, all right, we got those for Reno and Rude in the first one. So I'm like, I was hoping that they did that for her, and they did. And it's great. They even Sung, I loved him in this too. I feel like everyone got their bid, man. Everyone got their fucking time to shine.
Nah, bro,
it's crazy.
Sung straight up taking a death blow and then getting up and limping back to work. Like, I got a report to do.
Like, yep.
That's the most fucking metal thing I've seen in RPGs.
Yeah.
Homeboy,
because I was
suit,
like, oh, I remember him.
To the nines, takes a death blow from the fucking villain, limps away, and says, I have a job to do.
I for sure thought he was going to actually die there. I was like, oh, if they wanted to do something different, because I'm like, oh, well, we haven't really played with the idea of, like, oh, anyone can die now.
And honestly, you know? Sung and Aerith dying together in, like, that kind of way would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Man. Everything I loved Dio. Johnny was great in this. Even Hojo. Even Hojo. I was completely repulsed by him most of the time, but I feel like that's also, you know,
that's the point.
And he kept the Hojo hose. And I love that because you could do a side quest for them after, and they're just like, yeah, you know, we're trying to get our own shit started, and we thought, like, schmoozing up a chairman would be a good business decision. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense to me. You know, like, got to make those connections, I guess, you know, because I guess it's a better justification than just like, why is Hojo with these women in Costa del Sol for some reason? You know, like, it stood out so much in OG because you're like, what? How? What possible scenario could have resulted in this? You know? But yeah, every... Like, I keep thinking over, you know, the game, and I just am, like, trying to comb through. I'm like, yeah, I don't think there was any point. You know, I love the side stuff. I love Cosmo Canyon was great. You know, Corel, all the stuff with Dine, you know, all the parts that I'm like, this is gonna destroy me, they did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this I definitely wanted to talk about and may be its own thing at some point, but Guy Natak.
Yes.
Please, him
bring us the black material.
Basically has the first character that we've been introduced to, if you think about it, because that is absolutely the same voice as the announcement trailer for Remake. Even saying some of the lines, I don't think they're verbatim. I haven't gone back and checked yet. And like did a direct comparison between the two, but I have gone back and listened to the announcement trailer for Remake, and it is basically he's saying the same things. Like, it's the same. There's certain words that are changed, mm-hmm. but it's the same thing. And that is very interesting to me, because I think it was you had initially said to me, like, oh, I think that's the same voice as that guy, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you're as soon as you said it, it immediately clicked to me. I'm like, that's why this guy sounds kind of familiar. And, like, I just never picked up on it watching that trailer that we saw him in. But I love that stuff, man. All the, like, yeah, like, the Gi are just, like, yeah, we didn't come from the live stream, so we can't die.
By it.
we just basically we're just these angry spirits that just can never die ever. And we need the Black Materia in order to end our dream and end our suffering, essentially, which is also an interesting thing. And Glenn being here, which mm-hmm. as soon as it happened, I was like, okay, that's, yeah. I don't know why it would have, I don't know how it could have been anyone else, you know? But then I also was not, I'm still not up to date on the Ever Crisis stuff, like the First Soldier story stuff in there, so I guess Rufus kills him in that. So
yeah, I got a feeling they originally planned to drop that before this game.
Right. Yeah, that's what it made me a little confused, because I was like, oh, And I'm like, and then like, oh, he's dead. So I'm like, oh, okay. So so it's not him, or is it? Or is it? I don't know. Is the real Glenn still out there? Because Yuffie knows him. You know, he's part of the whatever, the SRC or whatever. The Shinra Resistance Committee? I think that's correct. Which I also think it's interesting, all the Wutai stuff that they're setting up with the war and
baby.
All this other stuff, which, man, another character I really loved in this was Rufus. Man, he had some of the best stuff, and I like that we're starting to see, like, Advent Children Rufus already.
Yeah.
Like we're starting to see that side of him already and be like, oh yeah, he's not entirely evil. He's just trying to put on the whole thing. And even though Sephiroth / Jenova kind of see through that a little bit, I mean, they directly call him out and be like, oh, you're just a insecure little bitch. Basically. You won't fire that cannon, bitch. but yeah, I mean, you know, once you were going through Nibelheim and you saw this stuff, oh, the Wutai soldiers being there, and you're like, oh, okay, so that's why Wutai is nowhere to be seen in this game, because they are saving all of that for the third game, for sure. And it's going to be a huge part of stuff in the events going forward, I'm sure. And I guess that also means that Matt and Lucia were his, the other first soldiers, I think.
Yeah, they're probably dead, or they're part of that committee.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say they're part of that committee. committee, because when Yuffie elaborated on it and she said, oh yeah, like, yeah, Captain Lodbrok and he had two other ex-soldiers that joined him, and like, oh, okay, like, what does that mean? And we still, even though we did get to see, like, Nio and Billy Bob and Polk, we didn't get to see a lot of other Avalanche stuff here, but I was not expecting them to, well, we know the fate of Wedge now, he's dead. Unfortunately, which was sad, but I liked that whole, like, cutscene where they were showing their attack on the Shinra Tower when we were up top, you know, and how Wedge got there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of expecting a bit more Avalanche stuff this time around, but I feel like now they're going to save it for Wutai, because they actually are obviously in cahoots with Wutai, so...
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't, and whatever this SRC business is, I think, you know, maybe we'll see. I'm like, oh, are we going to see fucking Sears and what's her face? Wow, I already forgot her name from before Crisis. The crazy chick. Yeah, you know, the crazy chick. Who was like the leader of Avalanche there. I forgot her name. Wonder, in Before Crisis, there was like Sears, and then there was the other guy who was like the villain, yeah, but then there was that girl that like, who was Verdot's daughter.
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember her name off the top
of my head. Yeah, I can't remember her name off the top of my head either, but maybe we'll see them in part three. But I also like, we also, a distinct lack of Gackt in this game as well. Even though I do...
Yeah, you know, a lot of people were thinking that was going to be a sure thing.
I would have been among them. And I was among them. But we did kind of... I still think that Broden, the innkeeper from Calm, looking like Angeal, is not... that's not a coincidence. Especially because he has Mako poisoning and, you know, becomes a robed man. Which, by the way, did anyone else find it hilarious that you kind of, they like, the robes just spawn on you? Like, I liked that whole sequence with Roche, you know, when he's turning. I love that whole, that fight and everything beforehand. But it kind of ruined it in the moment where, you know, the robes come over to him. And then, you know, he still has his, soldier uniform on. And then he just, you know, he kneels down and then he comes back up and then he's just in the robes. And I'm like, that's kind of funny. Like, that's, I don't know how else they would have done that unless he was, like, wearing a robe before the fight or something. And then he fully, you know, he had it, like, tied back or something. I don't know. Like, I don't think there was any other way that they probably could have done something like that, but I just thought it was silly. But, yeah, Rip Roach, man. And, hey, that was another one that we were calling, I think.
We've been calling that one for a long time.
Like, Roach is going to be involved somehow in something to happen, and he kind of was what I wanted him to be in this, where, like, you do fight him multiple times, and kind of he is, like, a vibe check sort of thing. I love the stuff in Junon with him, and he's got his own, you know, you do your own death arena battle with him, and the Midgar 7th Infantry, man.
They are my boys. I hope they're part of the airship's crew in part. Like, yeah, they are my boys. I want them there in the finale. I want them there. Like, those are my boys.
I love that. Like, they made those dudes like character. I'm like, and I care about them. You know, I and like all the other, do. the whole drill team, the whole you know, all the Miss Red and Mr. Blue, You know, and you do that whole, there's all other side quests that you do with them later on when you, when you're able to kind of like travel freely, which, by the way, I was not expecting to fully be able to pilot the tiny Bronco when it became, you know, the water form, I guess.
I'm not gonna lie. I was actually, there's one. Okay. We're talking about criticisms. I had the, piloting the Bronco.
It definitely felt in the air.
It was pointless.
Yeah. That was a gimmick.
You had better, like, you had better aviation simulations at the Gold Saucer.
Mm.
Why didn't you just do that?
Yeah. Just, I mean, I guess
there's
they didn't want to just make
the sky
it
for me to shoot down. There's no hoops.
They didn't
want to
make it the gummy
through.
Ship. I guess. Because that's essentially what it would have become. But yeah, but I know what you're saying. But
just
I think
something to do while I'm flying.
But it only,
like, you have me there. I'm pointlessly steering this thing while the characters are having a conversation. I'm like, should I be steering or should I be listening? Okay, maybe it's both. But what am I steering towards? The camera is steering me. I can only affect what corner
of the screen I'm moving. Yeah, moving a couple inches other up, down, left, or right.
Yeah,
basically.
I was just like, what are we doing?
It did seem a bit pointless. It should have just been a cutscene, because it only happens like twice, I think, in those sections. When you're leaving Gongaga and going to Cosmo Canyon, and then when you're going back to the saucer, and then that's when you lose your wings, and you know, then it becomes the tiny Bronco that we know and love. But, they were so short, really, in the grand scheme of things. Like, it stopped being a thing just as I was getting annoyed at it, you know? I'm like, okay, what's the point of this, you know? And then I knew, at least for the second time, I'm like, oh, I don't have to touch the controller during this. I have no bearing on this whatsoever. Which, you know, for a game that has, some may say, too much content in it, it's nice maybe to just take a bit of a breather,
right?
A bit of a respite for a little bit. But you know, I think, yeah, by and large, I like the game. I think story wise, character wise, combat wise, like, it's an improvement all across the board, I think. And the only real issues that I feel like me and you and a lot of other people have is the pacing. And honestly, that was my biggest concern going into it, because of the fact of it being an open world, you know, because Remake is kind, I wouldn't call it open world, really.
It's not open. Hold on. I have a bit, is a bit of a pet peeve of mine for the people who are calling it open world. I don't know. Again, it's a pet peeve. It's not open world in the slightest. Open world implies you can do things in whatever. At least you have some control in the narrative in terms of the order that you do things. Mm-hmm. You're able to freely explore. Like, you can't go to Cosmo Canyon once you boot up the game. You have to do the grasslands first. Then you have to do Junon. In an open world, you could go to any of those sections whenever you felt like it.
Right.
This is more open zone. In the
open
sense that
zone,
when you get put in a zone, you can go wherever you
and
want to in that
and eventually,
zone.
And eventually it does become truly open world where you can go wherever, even though
once you have the airship.
Yeah, it's still annoying because...
Well, open map. That's what the devs call it. They call it a world map.
Right,
they don't call it
right.
open world. They're just like...
But you still have to dock at the docks or go to the airstrips. You can't just like... Be like, oh, I want to go to this fast travel location
in
the grasslands. Right. And that's why I'm like, okay, it's a weird caveat, but sure, I guess, you know, you still want to have people, like, do stuff. But I don't know, at a certain point, yeah, I feel like just being able to teleport wherever and just, oh, it's implied that wherever at the nearest airstrip or dock that Cid's just going to be there in case I did want to manually drive around in the ocean, which... I mean, I, that to me felt like a very tacked on thing that like they're like, we didn't really get a chance to really flesh this out. But, you know, it's probably going to be something that we're going to be doing a lot of in the next game. So they probably wanted to at least get it in there and kind of workshop it maybe. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be some tweaks and stuff later on. Because I'm assuming that the Tiny Bronco in both flying and sailing form, you're effective. Maybe I'm being ambitious here, kind of like how this game felt like it sometimes, that you're going to be able to fully control it, you know, and summon it and just kind of whatever. And I think maybe that's a little too ambitious. But to be honest, with the level of detail and care and stuff that's been put into this game, and I feel like they did most of the work for Part 3 already in terms of like just the general world stuff. Whereas I feel like maybe, you know, because the jump from Remake to Rebirth is not going to be as jarring, I think, between Rebirth and whatever the third game is, you know? Like, I feel like a lot of the groundwork for the third game is there from this game, and you could kind of... I think towards the end I was feeling like, all right, they've set up a thing here, and I don't think we're going to have to wait as long for the third game. Is in between, like we did for Remake and Rebirth, you know? Because it's there, like everything's there. We didn't really talk about Vincent. I like Vincent a lot in this.
He was awesome. He was everything he needed to be in this.
I love that we got to fight his Limit Break form. It was a fun fight as well. And I cannot wait for the shenanigans, because like when they were all together, and like there wasn't that much time really with all of them together doing stuff, but the stuff that we did get, I'm like, yeah, I fucking fucking love these nerds. Just, you know, just like even like Yuffie and Barret's relationship in this is great.
Yep,
the stuff with Nanaki and Aerith, and even Tifa and Aerith and Cloud and everyone else, I think is great. And who did you get for your gold saucer date?
I got Tifa.
See, I got Barret.
Nice.
Which I don't know how, because I at that point when I first got back to the gold saucer, at that point I only had Aerith maxed out, and I was like, I mean, I could do that, but I also kind of wanted to get Tifa, you know, because I got her the first time around. So I'm like, okay, maybe, you know, when you go there first and then you go do all the mini games and everything, and then you go back a second time and you do the date. So I'm like, oh, okay, but let me make sure, because she wasn't maxed out at that point. So I'm like, oh, let me do the stuff for her and get her stuff maxed out. But over the course of doing that, I also maxed out like everybody else. So I was kind of curious. I'm like, how are they going to handle this? How are they going to pick who I go on the date with? And then when I got Barret, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I was literally expecting anybody. I was like, oh, it could be literally anyone. And I'm like, oh, okay. And it was nice. You know, it was kind of, you know, exactly what you would expect. Yeah, it was just like the affinity scene in Remake a little bit. You know, where they're just, they just have a, they just have a bro-to-bro bro moment. Yeah. And, oh, I loved Loveless, by the way. I loved
that the whole performance.
The whole thing is, it was great. And apparently I didn't realize that you could, like, if you got Tifa as your date, that she would be playing in the play. I had Aerith in mine. Because I guess Barrett's technically already involved in it. But I love, it's just like them, you know, like clearly you could tell the direction for this is like, yeah, try to pretend like you can't act. Pretend like you're, you know, you've never been in a stage play before. Well, I mean,
well,
I don't
be
know.
In character, right? You're playing as Cloud, who's not a right. theater kid.
Exactly.
You know?
And then you're just like, yes. It very much gives off the vibe of like, yes, we're like, you go to your kid's school play kind of thing, but with a higher production value. And it was great. It's just charming. And it, like, this game was oozing with charm from every single orifice. Like, every single part of this game is just, there's so much put into all of it. And it's a lot. It's overwhelming. Even just us thinking about it and talking about it, like, it gets me overwhelmed. And over the course of playing the game, I'm like, man, we're going to be talking about this game for a long, long time, because there's just so much stuff. And like, even in this episode, I feel like I barely even, because I was kind of torn on whether or not I was going to take notes during my first playthrough, because I did do that for Remake, but I didn't do it this time. And I think it was for the better, because I, at a certain point, I don't know even know what I would have written for a lot of stuff, and just been like, just rambling of like, oh, what, this and that. I need like a whiteboard to talk about this game. I need to go full on Pepe Silvia, just to make sure I don't miss anything. So I think, you know, obviously in the future, we'll go over a lot more stuff in detail. But yeah, what a game, man. What a game.
I know.
I feel so bad for anyone who doesn't have a PS5. But hey, I mean, apparently they're super easy to buy now. So there's that. But they
in
also cost a lot of money.
Not so, much price. Yeah,
so you know, I get it. But yeah, I mean, did you didn't have any like game like glitches or anything? I had a very weird one where Cloud would, I don't even know what caused it, but when Cloud was not on a chocobo or anything and just like kind of standing in the open or the free world, he just like leaned forward a little bit. He was like permanently sort of leaning forward just a little bit, not like too much, but it was like noticeable where you like, it almost felt like, you know, he was kind of like standing on his tippy toes almost, and just like doing a Michael Jackson almost. You know, doing the lean. But then, yeah, I ended up just like reloading my save and it fixed it. But that was the only time I ever had an issue in terms of like technical stuff. I played on performance mode. I know a lot of people have been talking about like the performance mode and graphics mode and this, you know, all this debate about what's, you know, whatever. Honestly, it's kind of like subs and dubs in anime. Whatever you feel the most comfortable playing with, because I don't think there's anything wrong with 30 frames a second. I just prefer a smoother frame rate if that means a lower visual fidelity. I'm okay with taking that hit, as long as it's not too egregious. It was egregious in the demo, I will admit that, but then they fixed it mostly. And I think at this point now, if you play the game in performance mode, now they have like performance, like higher quality and performance lower quality or something like that. I think it works fine. And the game still looks gorgeous most of the time. And, you know, there was nothing as egregious as the door. You know, there was nothing. It was never at that point.
No.
But, yeah, I think the game looked great. And it felt great, played great. Everything was great. I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to think, was there anything else
in terms of like a general stuff reaction? That, I mean, I guess I just want to re-highlight
love the gameplay.
There's something I've said on this show a lot that I guess I want to give the game its due for. One thing I said is I wanted to feel like gameplay-wise, not just graphics-wise, but gameplay-wise, I wanted to play this game and feel like, yeah, no way this could have been made on the PlayStation 4. And honestly, I felt that. Like, with the combat, I was like, yeah, no way a PS4 would be able to run all of this. And then you have six party members running around with you in these worlds.
Yeah,
these towns are filled with NPCs galore. Like, there could be 50 to 100 characters spawned in your vision at any point. Not to mention that you can do a team-up attack, switch off the two characters doing a team-up attack,
do a limit break
with the third, and your three characters who are not in your party will still continue doing their attacking in the background. Meanwhile, when I would do that kind of stuff, not one frame rate drop, continued to look stunning. Like, it's just stuff
it all
like
felt
that.
Buttery smooth the whole time.
And that's where I was like, yeah, this experience could not be had on a PS4.
Yeah, and I think I also wanted to mention, because you made me think of it, I love the way that they implemented, like, yeah, everyone's just with you all the time. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, that was the way to handle it, I think. And it also led to a lot of funny things, because when you're exploring, like, they're all just like, they literally just follow you. You know, matter if even if you go up somewhere and come down, like, they'll all climb up and climb down. Like, there's a lot of times where, like, I would climb up somewhere and there wouldn't be anything, like, super, you know, meaningful up there. Or just be like, oh, just like a chest with a phoenix down in it or something. And then have everyone climb up and just hearing everyone going hoop, hoop, in the background and be like, oh, sorry, guys, we got to go back down now. And another thing, I guess, I saw a lot of people talking about the yellow paint. I don't even know. It's probably not even worth talking about.
You're
really
allowed to not like it, but listen, FF7 Rebirth is not going to live and die on its wall climbing mechanic.
No. Even though there were some times where I'm like, man, this really feels like Uncharted. Just like these, you know, big set pieces based around climbing on stuff. I'm like, okay, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I think it's implemented fine. And you know, whether or not they need to be in games in general, I mean, it's a whole other discussion. I don't particularly mind them, you know? I mean, I don't need a game to completely handhold me, and I don't think this game really does do that. I think, for the most part...
But again, its challenge and thrills are not in figuring out where to climb.
Right. Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
That's not
it's
where...
It's not Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, the fun, you know, exploring is fun in this, and that's another thing too, is that the exploring felt fun. You wanted to do stuff, and like in the first initial, like in the grasslands in Junon area, I wanted to just like look everything, and like it still happened in other regions, but I do feel like as the game went on, I became less and less like, all right, like Cosmo Canyon, I'm like, okay, like you see one part of Cosmo Canyon, you see it all, sort of thing. But even in itself, there's just so much variety, and like every area feels unique and has its own, you know, feel, and you know, obviously like its own music and chocobos, and you know, it's just every area feels like very distinct, and I love that. You know, I can remember every part of this game vividly, and be like, yeah, I can still remember, you know, the jungles of Gongaga and the amazing music in Gongaga. I loved probably my favorite theme of like the open world. It's either Gongaga or Corel. I think might be in tie for my favorite like world themes.
Gongaga's world theme, dude. I felt like I was Samurai Simba.
it's weird because, like, I mean, Gongaga, we don't really see it in Crisis Core that much, and it's definitely not in OG. It's like what, like a couple of screens, I think, if that. So it's nice to see them sort of give Gongaga its own, you know, personality, I guess, because it didn't really have anything like that before. It's just we knew that it was like some, you know, backwoods kind of place. But even then, it's like it's still beautiful, you know, weird kind of like Middle Eastern sort of stuff going on there in terms of like the design of the village and things like that. I'm like, oh, it was nice to see. And that one of the biggest things that I ever had, even from playing from Remake and thinking about the future of whatever this is, whatever we'll end up calling this trilogy at some point, you know, was just them expanding on all the stuff that's already kind of there and stuff that's, you know, we know from Remake, and they did that again in spades, you know, mm-hmm. in every possible way. And I don't think this throughout this entire episode, I've just been like, is there anything that like is particularly egregious about this game?
No.
Aside from the pacing? No. Like, the pacing is probably I'll say this.
I felt that... Now, let me be clear. Because I've done a whole review on this game. I gave it a...
Out of 10. Two sneezes out of 10. There you go.
Two sneezes out of 10. No, but honestly, I gave the game... Oh, God.
Three sneezes out of 10.
What is it? I'm like possessed up the ranks. By their competition. Like, Capcom's possessing me, not letting me say it. Anyway, I gave the game a 9.5 out of 10. But let me say this. I felt that the character-driven narratives were incredibly strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the narrative surrounding Cloud, Tifa, Barrett, Aerith, these character-driven parts of the narrative, I thought were incredibly strong. Some of the strongest, if not the strongest, we've seen in the Final Fantasy series. And that's saying a lot, because whereas Remake is this standalone story where it's a complete arc, a complete character arc, complete story in that way, Rebirth really is a narrative cut in half. Remake, if they never made a game after Remake, Remake could exist as its own story of heroes triumphing over fate in hopes for a better future. It really could exist as its own little story. Rebirth, where it struggles, is a fractionated narrative where essentially we've cut a narrative in half and they're leaving us at the emotional climax.
Yes.
So with that said, I felt that the backdrop narrative of Rebirth for a Final Fantasy was a little on the weak side. And that's only because it's just that where we went as a party was simply dictated by where are the hooded figures going. Right, whereas in Remake, we're going to go to this reactor to blow it up because Cloud took a job, and then Cloud's got to go on this mission because Jesse, you know, busted her ankle, so now they hired him for the job to go there. We got to go to the Shinra Tower to rescue Aerith. Like, there were, in Remake, and typically in Final Fantasy's FF16 comes to mind, there are a very wide range of motivations and catalysts that move us from town to town, continent to continent, place to place. But in Rebirth, and sometimes playing it simple can be a good thing, and I actually think in Rebirth it is, but the fact that where the party went in Rebirth, 9 times out of 10 was just dictated by, well, where are they going?
All right. Right. We'll it did feel, a lot of the time, it did feel a bit like rudderless and being like, yeah, we're just following these guys, and then eventually they're like, oh, yeah, we should go to Cosmo Canyon. Like, and it's funny because I thought that that was going to happen, even though I had sort of predicted like the order of events that were in, you know, how they were going to play out. I was like, man, Cosmo Canyon doesn't come around for like a good chunk of this game. Yeah. Like, you know, they're like, it, a good chunk of this game goes by where they're like, yeah, maybe we should go by Cosmo Canyon, and be like, oh, okay. And then I feel like that's when the story really starts picking up from there. And, you know, and I get it, you know, they have this whole world, and that, you know, they were able to put so much stuff in there that they weren't able to do so much in OG, you know, for obvious reasons. And whether or not it's worth it, I'll leave it up for you, dear listener, to decide. But yeah, I think that it definitely started really strong. And I think, but the main through line story stuff, was consistently strong throughout the entirety of the thing. Yeah. But in terms of like the other stuff, yeah, like the you know, open worldy, you know, climbing towers and all that stuff, you know, not much to say about that sort of stuff. And then at a certain point, it's kind of like, eh, but you know, you can completely skip it. And that's, I like that, because then that doesn't give anyone an excuse. It'd be like, hey, you didn't like that stuff? You could just skip it. You don't have to touch it if you don't want to, you know? So I think that they, at least they took the consideration for that of like, yeah, you know, we'll give the option. Like, if you don't want to play a single match of Queen's Blood in this entire game, I don't think you have to. So
you might have to play like the tutorial, but that's about it.
Right. Yeah. The tutorial. And then I don't know, maybe the first round of the tournament. I'm not sure. But yeah, you don't want to do any of the World Intel stuff. No, you don't have to. It's completely optional. And I think that was the better approach, you know, and then just being like, yeah, we're not going to lock it behind progression or any of this other stuff, except for that weird one proto relic in Corel for some reason. But yeah, all that stuff, all the Gilgamesh and all that stuff has been great so far. Literally just lost all the proto relics are pieces of his armor. And I don't know like the full story with that yet, because I that was like the one piece of side content that I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna save that for my next run, because I'd done everything else and I was right before the Temple of the Ancients, so I'm like, I'm just gonna play the fucking game, I'm just gonna finish the game first. But yeah, man, there's so much in this game, and we've only been talking almost an hour and a half, and I still feel like we barely even touched.
It's like, why we're gonna fragment it, be like, this episode's about the ending, this episode's about the gameplay, this episode, you know, we're gonna fractionate this so that we can really dig into this stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I fucking loved the game. I loved it.
9.5 out of 10.
I got pretty much everything that I wanted from it, out of it, and I cannot wait for the third game, whatever that ends up being called. And maybe DLC, because I think they could absolutely do a Vincent DLC. They could do like a Vincent prequel DLC maybe, or something. I don't know. Or maybe even a Cid prequel. Maybe we do get
That would be nice.
Edgy, abusive Cid, like the fans want. But no, I think they might. I think they'll probably just save that for the third game. If I would have to imagine, because you know, every member of the party got their due, so I don't think that they would be excluded from that. You know. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they couldn't do a DLC and then also do more stuff in the game, but I also, people were saying that people from the game were being like, there's not going to be DLC, and but I don't know,
we'll
man.
We'll see.
We'll see. I don't know if I buy that. I feel like that's what you would say if you were going to do a DLC and you didn't want anyone to get their hopes up, and then you'd surprise us with some wacky, here's Dirge of Cerberus remastered.
I'm down for Dirge LC. That's what I want.
Dirge LC, yes. Yes, that's what we need.
Every DLC should just be Dirge.
Yep. Let's have a Azul DLC, and it's only about him.
It's only about him.
The origin story of Azul the Cerulean. And that's it.
That's all you get.
We did see a little bit more of Nero here, sort of, kind of. But, I mean, obviously it wasn't really him, but like a projection of him, but...
Yeah, I'm not ready to talk about the trials, honestly.
Yeah, we're not. We're not.
There are a couple of those that I'll probably never watch again.
We ain't touching those for a hot minute. The trials of suffering. That shit was wild.
Not an easy watch.
But I mean, and even the wilder part was like, you know, they all went through it. And Aerith is giving her a little pep talk, and Cloud's like, are you done? Just like full Chode mode. Just like, yeah. Oh, man. And then you're like, Cloud is, he's going through it, man. He's going through it real bad. And he's if anything, it's going to get worse than it was in OG for sure. And, oh man, you had to, when you're walking up to Aerith and then you have to mash, you have to mash to not fucking raise your sword up, dude. I never really get into QTEs, you know. I mean, sometimes, like, if it's like an especially hype moment, I'll get into it.
There has to be a theatric to it.
Right, and with this, I was going to fuck, and it's because it was L2 and R2, I believe. I've never mashed like that, and I've been so hard, because I'm like, I didn't know what was going to happen at that point. I'm like, maybe you're actually just going to kill her right now if you don't do it or something. I didn't know if they were going to, I didn't think they'd go that far, but, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen, so I'm like, no! Like, normally I don't get invested in QTEs, you know. Most, because I feel like a lot of times QTEs are just kind of, they throw them in games now to kind of just be like, oh, to keep you engaged with the game. But yeah, when they're plot and like thematically, you know, necessary or enhance, enhancing, not necessary, but enhancing, and making you actually, like, this actually makes me feel like I'm preventing possibly Cloud killing Aerith right now. That's the time you should have a QTE. Not for literally everything in the game. You know? Yeah. But, yeah, man. I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know how to end this. I don't know.
I mean, I think a good thing is, you know, we generally gave our thoughts. And from here on out, we're going to do things a little bit more specifically so that we're going to hyper-focus.
Yeah, and then we can really get into the thick of everything and go on this wild-ass journey that we're being that we're being led on by these crazy bastards over here, these sickos, if you will. Yeah. Jeez, man. Like I said before, what a game.
Tremendous.
Everything and more. And, I guess, I don't know, was there anything else that you wanted to
bring up? No, just that I look forward to talking about it more, honestly. I look forward to talking about it live. So those of you who are listening to this, you can chime in real time, give us your thoughts, ask us some questions, stuff like that, you know?
Keep us on the rails. The opportunities are endless. With the Midgar Minute, you never know what you're going to get. But yeah, I'm excited for this the rebirth era of the Midgar Minute, and hopefully we'll see you guys there. But until...
See ya, guys there.
Until the next time, when you'll be seeing us or hearing from us live. enjoy your days, everyone, and I'll count us down. Yeah, I'll count us down this time.
You got this?
Yeah. All right, everybody. 3, 2, 1. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da